Thursday it is. That means it's time for Perspectives on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thanks so much for tuning in this week and joining us as we get an anniversary commemorated, and we'll talk about that in just a second. Before we do begin, a reminder that you're always invited to be part of the conversation and the discussion by calling 414-1234 locally. The long distance number is 800-926-8809, and we have an email address that is perspectives@wfsu.org. You may also follow us on Twitter at WFSU Perspective. Let's see, are we on Tumblr yet? I don't think we're on Tumblr yet, huh? Do we have a YouTube channel? There's so many ways to communicate nowadays. You kind of get lost here. Well, since the passage of the Americans with Disabilities Act 23 years ago, tomorrow, as a matter of fact, there are certainly more wheelchair-friendly door ramps and bathroom stalls than there used to be. But there are many facets to the law that most of us don't realize or understand, and we also want to use that as a jumping-off point for a further discussion. So this morning on Perspectives, we're going to be talking a bit about the law, sure, but that'll be leading us into that greater global discussion of where we are and where we go from here, especially for those of us whose disabilities, if you will, are still ahead of us, and how we can prepare for what is to come. So we got a great panel, and some of these folks will probably be familiar to you if you've been listening to the show for any length of time. We say hi and welcome back to J.R. Harding, one of Florida's leading advocates for people with disabilities through his work with the Florida Agency for People with Disabilities and also his many independent outreaches as a coach, consultant, motivational presenter, and hanging out with a whole bunch of Boy Scouts up in West Virginia recently. How was that trip, J.R.?
It was an adventure. But very exciting to see the youth, the diversity, and the enthusiasm of the young people to come. So it was an honor and pleasure to participate and be with fellow scouts.
I was going to say, did you get to get back into your uniform again? Or?
Well, mine technically didn't fit anymore, but they did give me a bunch of patches, and I felt like a scout all over again.
Oh, man. Well, you're certainly a merit badge kind of guy, J.R. Good to have you back on the show. And we say hi to the first time for Larry Baxter. He heads the Bureau of Elder Rights for the Florida Department of Elder Affairs. And in case you're not aware, the Elder Rights Bureau helps folks age with security through programs to ensure that those of us who are getting older, and I think that includes most, if not all of us, are able to access and maintain benefits and legal rights. Things such as serving health insurance needs of elders, the SHINE program, which is really cool, Communities for a Lifetime. We'll be talking more about that today. And also the Elder Abuse Prevention Program. Larry, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you. Great for having me here.
And returning to these microphones, an old friend too, Jack Levine, who's founder of the Four Generations Institute. And for about a quarter century leading up to that, he was president of Voices for Florida's Children. And he's also now partnership director of Grand E Magazine, national publication, reaches out to 78 million plus active and energetic grandparents. And boy, that's a big job, Jack. How'd you get involved with that?
Well, aging is not only a right, it's a reality. And as we mature, we realize that in our family life, in our community life, and in our policy life, we have to understand the demographic shift. So we're going to talk about that today, and Florida is basically point central for all of those.
It sure is. As we kick off this, let's get back to you, JR, because, I mean, you had, you know, two catastrophic situations that put you in a wheelchair and has kept you there since. And looking back over the 23 years we've had the Americans with Disabilities Act, give us that thumbnail sketch of the before and the after.
Well, if we looked in our history books, there's a thing called the Dark Ages. That's what it makes me think of. And the Americans with Disabilities Act transformed the way I looked at my possibilities. And as I shared with the young scouts, that because of the empowerment of the people of America and what independence meant to thrive, I was able to do so in our communities with less barriers than before.
You say less barriers, but certainly there are still barriers there.
Well, certainly. I mean, whether you have a disability or not, we all have challenges in life. Just some of ours are more profound, and that the Americans with Disabilities Act is meant to remove some of the physical structural barriers, some of the attitudinal barriers, the employment barriers, the educational barriers, and whether it's political, educational, social, economic, and just simply independent living, it's about being as independent, as self-sufficient as possible.
And that gets us here to Larry Baxter, because we're talking about independent living and all that. And the, I guess the default position for many of us is, you know, we'll hit a certain point in our lifespan, and then it is time to kind of shuffle off into the nursing home. You know, you even see things on TV. I saw this the other night, and it kind of gave me pause because I knew we were going to be talking about this. A service called A Place for Mom. And I'm thinking, does Mom really want to go anyplace? Does anyone ask Mom if she wants to go someplace? Is that kind of where the Department of Elder Affairs is connected here?
Well, definitely the department is tasked with providing home-based services and opportunities for all seniors. And most people, when they think about the Department of Elder Affairs, their mind goes to nursing homes and assisted living facilities and those seniors with those needs and challenges. And clearly that's correct. And there are those services we provide. The programs that I primarily oversee address those what we call well elders, those who are doing well for the most part. And they're living independent and staying in their home and not necessarily needing the services of assisted living facility or nursing home. But we're really looking at that population to help prevent or at least continue their ability to remain independent in their home. Even if they do, and we suspect that most people will have some kind of chronic disease or illness or some challenges as they age. You know, I often say to people when I'm doing speeches when we're talking about aging in place, which is sometimes not a very interested topic. People don't want to think about aging. But I ask, you know, what's the greatest benefit of aging in place? And I often get different kind of responses. But for me, you're still alive. You're still waking up the next day and going about your business. So we're really looking at ways that we can help people to remain independent, remain in a lifestyle that they choose and remain in their home. And a home is a big piece of that aging in place piece. So that's what we're going to talk a lot about today is that home piece. And there's really that connection between persons with disability and individuals as they age, because as you age, you know, your senses are impacted and there's that diminished capacity, whether sight, vision, ability to walk. So, you know, there's that real connection there that we really want to talk to your listeners about today.
Yeah, and Jack Levine, what's your connection to all this here as you communicate, particularly with those 78 million energetic and active grandparents all over the country? What's your vested interest in all this?
Well, I'm an advocate, and I do my best to collect information, collect perspectives from people on their emotional and economic needs and try to translate that to a wider audience, whether it be media or public officials or the community at large. You know, there's a big difference between life and quality of life, and we can celebrate longevity and the ages, but we also have to ensure as well as we can that there's a quality involved in that life. And something that Larry said resonated with me, which is about prevention. You know, people usually think of prevention as underage 6 years old. And yeah, we can do a lot of prenatal care and preschool and good prevention under kindergarten. But I believe that prevention can happen at any stage of life. And my definition is keeping bad things from happening. So a bad thing, if you have a physical challenge, is not being able to carry on as you would like to normally with a job, with social life, with recreation. So keeping those barriers from being constructed or overcoming those barriers is about prevention, just like Larry said about helping people to be where they want to be rather than to be moved unnecessarily and, by the way, more expensively than it would be, because almost always prevention is less costly than the problem. So when I think about the advocate viewpoint, it is how do we take the experiences of amazing advocates like JR, of amazing policy leaders in government like Larry and bring that to the forefront so we can make good advanced planning before emergencies happen. Because when the house is on fire, it's not time to find out where the hydrant is. And we always have to find a way to kind of keep things on the proactive side, and that's my philosophy. And I'm pleased to be there where the aging community is, because that's where our society is.
And also where we have a lot of and we'll get to the call here, George. You hang on just a second, because you can expand upon this, I think, in a pretty dramatic fashion. But the fact that we are talking about just factoring out the age situation just for a moment, that you have essentially one in five people in the United States with some kind of disability right now. Everybody knows somebody who has a disability.
And beyond that, and as we continue to age, not only will that one in five retain that disability, but then two of ten will have a significant disability. And many people don't characterize or want to raise their hand of saying, I have a disability, because they feel then it's somehow embarrassing, a weakness that impugns their independence. And I think, as Larry and Jack had indicated, the recent AARP study showed 90% of everybody would like to age in their home. The home is in the empowering location. That's where you start with your strength, whether it's your grandchildren, your spouse, your friends, and your neighbors. And then once you that home environment will allow you to go out and tackle some of those other barriers. So I'm excited to partner with Larry and the Agency for Persons with Disabilities with Elder Affairs, as we have for the last year or so, in merging our two worlds to create some universal sense of community, place, and quality.
Because we talk so much about, again, going back to that nursing home situation that everybody wants to avoid. You know, I don't with any relish look forward to a time when I would have to leave my house that I've known for now more than 30 years and go to a place that is essentially full of strangers.
Let me say on that point, Tom, there's a generational shift here. I think we need to talk about who the nursing home patients are from a generation past and who they will not be in this generation.
More of that to come here in just a moment on Perspectives. 414-1234. Give us a call. Okay, do you like your house? Do you enjoy living there? Are you comfortable? Is it a nurturing kind of environment that you would like to continue to be in? I think most of us would probably say yes, unless we really hate the house and we're shopping for a new one. But in any event, if you would like to stay there for an extended period of time as the years roll on, that's what we're talking about, among other things here on Perspectives today. And Jack Levine is going to pick up on a thread that we kind of unraveled right before the break there, as far as the intergenerational expectations of that. What really did you mean there, Jack?
Well, in reality, our parents' generation were a more I don't want to call them compliant, but it was a different time. It's when segregation and separation were kind of the norm, but also agreement that you kind of play by the rules. Now, the 60s generation kind of bent the rules. So one of my friends told me this anecdote. I'll tell it real quick. He said, you know, when I was in college, when we didn't agree with certain policies of the administration, we didn't just hang around. We took over the administration building. In fact, if they try to put me in an inappropriate place, I'm taking the place over. So, I mean, there is that could be looked at as a joke, but I think there's a whole attitudinal shift. And those of us who are full-fledged boomers right now and getting into our aging years, we are looking at empowerment and activism in a whole new way. And therefore, I think our policies and our programs will have to reflect who we are.
Yes, I remember a certain rock and roll song that said, "We're not going to take it," right? To the phones we go. George patiently awaits. Hey, George.
Hey, good morning, Tom. A good subject as always, and certainly somebody that's under the ADA as I am, and you know, it's good to hear from Mr. Harding, and certainly everybody knows the work Mr. Levine has done, not only for children but for humanity. You know, it's we made a lot of progress on ADA concerns, but I hope everybody realizes that just because we have made progress, we still got a long way to go.
And George, for your particular situation, since you were visually impaired, what kind of, I guess, special living arrangements are helpful to you to keep you cooking and doing what you need to do?
I managed to, you know, I have some things like digital equipment, like a convection oven and a microwave, that I've written some Braille labels and numbers and such on, or for, I should say, and pasted them on the different buttons so that I know what they are. And other than that, basically, you know, I just move around and do things as anybody else would, and you know, think nothing of it, because if you know, you have to survive. And you know, there are times when I go to the store, pull something out of my freezer, I don't know what I'm going to have that night sometimes, but so what? It's there, so I manage to cook it and eat it.
Yeah, vegetable surprise. That's one of my favorites, too.
So. Yeah?
George, good to hear from you as always, and that brings us back again to a situation where we're talking about various kinds of disabilities, which may be people have mobility challenges, you may have strength challenges, you may have visual or auditory impairments. I mean, it covers the entire gamut. And so when you're talking about, JR, this whole aging in place thing and preparing a place, your place to live for whatever may come, how can you do that? I mean, it may be anything that you may have to prepare for.
Well, I think that's where the partnership between APD and Elder Affairs and the advocate community is lighting a fire with this generation and coming at it from a universal design concept of, can our homes have the shell features in there that are really invisible to the naked eye, that does not say, hey, I have special features in this house, but rather I have a universal approach to my home that then could meet unique needs, whether it's a cognitive, a mobility, a autism, or maybe you know, washing dishes from a wheelchair. And so the concept of, I think, building for the ages or moving your parts around just like you change out your furniture. So the key here would be preparation for aging, preparation for the insurance issue. And for me, I think it's fundamentally a decision you can't afford not to make.
Okay. And Larry Baxter, are there any guidelines or rule books to these kinds of things? If I'm going to do some work in the house instead of concentrating on, you know, granite countertops, which are lovely things and we all would love to have them, but maybe that there are other priorities that I should take into account.
I want to address one comment that Jack made about the nursing homes, and I will address what you just asked. And I think, you know, from our context department, you know, nursing homes, assisted living facilities, adult family care homes, they all have their responsibility. They all have some individuals who really need that level of service and that care or want that service and care. But we found that many people ended up there not necessarily because they needed that level of care, that level of service, but because their home no longer or
met their needs.
Or they had a sibling or child or someone who had some authority over their care and custody chose that living environment for them. But what we are really looking to do is looking at addressing these home issues because private homes are not covered under ADA statute. But to implement certain kind of features, we're calling them universal design features, which are very common known in some areas, that provide resources in the home. Some are physical, some are just lighting or different ways of situating your home so that you have that mobility. And, you know, we're kind of looking at two different avenues. One is how to work with the building industry to implement these features into their model homes. Things like wider doors, zero entrance when the landscape allows that, how they place the receptacles on the wall, a little higher height, walk-in showers. There's a whole list of those kind of elements, and we have them on our website, and I'll give that address in a little bit. But there's things that builders can do that are very little, if no cost to them when they're constructing new construction. For example, putting backing, grab bar backing in the walls so that you don't have to put the grab bars in, but just put the blocking. So if someone later on chooses to do that, you know, they don't have to tear a wall down to put in and just go to, you know, box office stores and buy what they want and screw them in. One thing we learned from JR, we were building fortunately able to build a home here in Tallahassee that's an aging-in-place home. And JR was going through the house, and just a simple thing like the range had the controls in the back of the range. And he just showed, when he would have to reach across the range to turn it on or turn it off, he basically would be burning his hand. So looking at ways to put those controls on the front of the range. Now, you know, the caveat is if you have young children in the house, you might choose to do the back of the range because of the safety issue with them. So you have to look at what your specific needs are. But those kind of things that builders, developers can ingrain in their primary base design. And, of course, as a homeowner, the other range is to educate them about asking for these features.
What do they need to know?
What they need to
know. Right. And then can it be incorporated in the shopping list of your cupboards, your sink, your tile, your floor, your lever door handles? So it then becomes a market-driven principle to drive the independence of our aging community, which is, as Jack knows, almost 80 million boomers and another nearly 60 million persons with disabilities. I think that's half of America, if not half of the world.
Yeah, but you do have that deniability, right, Jack Levine? Because you have people say, oh, right. You know, I won't grow up. I remember that song too.
Well, you know, we all have illusions or delusions when we look in the mirror. But if we look at demography, there's a phrase called demography is destiny. Florida is point central. The Florida of 2014 is the nation of 2050. So we will be judged by whether we get this right or get this wrong. But either way, we're going to be assessed as to whether we've recognized who we are. You know, we've doubled twice in 45 years as a population. And it's not just everybody's the same, but, you know, we have a whole generation of folks who moved here relatively healthy in their 50s, 60s, and early 70s. And as we age, the reality is our vision, our hearing, our reflexes, our mobility, those are all subject to some decline, some more than others. And if the builders and the planners and the technology folks and the retailers are smart, which I trust they are, they're going to realize this is not just about philanthropy. This is about profit. The whole concept of what do we want to buy is going to be based upon, as our panel members say, based upon reality and need. So, you know, we want to get ahead of the curve here. Let's get the research going and let's get the policies going so that we can all have a better quality of life where everyone wins. The only other point I'd make on that is we've got to do more advanced care directives than we do. There's an estimate out there. My sister-in-law, Victoria Hewler, is a elder care attorney. Only one of five families have full paperwork done in terms of advanced care directives. Now, we can all kind of go along with the delusion that we're going to be fine. Well, one bad traffic accident or one bad fall or one bad whatever all of a sudden puts us in the hot seat in terms of advanced care directives. And if we don't have those done, then strangers will be making decisions about us. And none of us want to be in that situation. So let's get our lawyers and our medical folks and our advocates together and say, let's do a plan for getting everyone to have advanced care directives so that we don't have to suffer the consequences of that absence.
And this has to be on a voluntary basis because the ADA does not, or no other statute requires that this be done, right?
Yeah, part of what Jack is, I think, referring to as well is that we don't want to think about aging. so we don't plan for aging. And your analogy of, you know, when the house is on fire, that's not the time to try to find out where the fire hose is or
the spigot.
The spigot, whatever. and that's the issue. You know, I've built two homes. And, you know, my thinking when I built the first home is not where my thinking is today. And I think that's the case for most individuals who build their homes in their 20s, 30s, 40s. They're not thinking about when they're 50, 40, 50, 60, 70. And we're living a lot longer. I have an aunt in Philadelphia who is 97, I believe, now. And she, maybe about 10 years ago, fell and broke her femur. And as a result, she was in a two-story home. She couldn't go upstairs, which is where the bedrooms and bathroom are located. Fortunately, she had the resources to convert her dining room into a bedroom, and they built a bath in the first floor. Otherwise, she would have had to leave that home because she just couldn't live in that home. So, fortunately, in Florida, most homes are one story. There are two-story homes, but most homes are one story. But many homes, if you happen to have a wheelchair, you can't get in the bathroom because the door is not wide enough to accommodate that. Or if you get in there, you can't maneuver because, again, you know, the room is not large enough. So, you know, many folks don't think about that when they're building homes. And in reality is that most individuals who are on home aren't going to go out and build a new home because they can't get in their bathroom. They're going to renovate. So renovation is a big part of this discussion as well, of learning what kind of resources are there out there that I can use when I'm considering what my needs are, as well as those professionals who do the renovation, that they're informed and educated that they can make those recommendations as well. If someone's renovating their bathroom, right, they can say
guiding their customer along the lifeline of this home, because it's the biggest investment most people make, and will it last you the ages? And as Jack was indicating earlier, those directives, those strategic plans, because when an issue hits, the last thing you need to do is spend $30,000, $40,000, or $50,000 to fix a particular problem, and then all of a sudden, you know what? The institution or some other place of care that's not your home becomes a greater likelihood of occurring.
Yes, but this, I'm thinking of a comparison or an analogy here. A generation ago, builders and individuals for whom they were working would not have considered the need to conserve energy any kind of great priority. It was, again, what kind of countertops do we have? What kind of molding do we have around the doors? And now that is a standard operating procedure. R30 insulation, you know, in the attic? Yep, done. Let's see, double pane windows? Pretty much standard stuff, you know?
You know, when you double life expectancy, which we have almost in a century, there are certain realities that are necessary to keep pace. Of every 85-year-old who has ever been alive in the United States, we have more 85-year-olds today. What that simply means is we have grown and we have expanded our life capacity. Now, with that comes the absolute necessity to have our political leaders and our business leaders recognize that every family has a certain degree of anxiety and challenge around the reality of our aging relatives. When we were all growing up in the 50s, at least when I was growing up in the 50s, there were children, parents, and grandparents. Now we've got another generation. I call them super elders, but they are not aging with all the faculties and abilities that we hope for. So I really believe, and we are saying this in several different ways, but you know, the idea of disability is usually categorized by, you know, what lens do we see? In JR's case, it's physical mobility. In my father's case, it was visual handicapped. In my brother-in-law's case, it's MS. But I don't think there's a family that's immune from some reality of a challenge that I think we should have the moral and also economic engine to help support and to resolve.
Aging in place and disabilities and preparing for the future is what we're talking about on Perspectives, 414-1234-800-926-8809, and perspectives at WFSU.org is the email. Let's go to the phones. Mark awaits. Hey, Mark.
How you doing? Your favorite builder here.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, good. I'm glad to get in on this conversation. I tuned it in late, but I just wanted to let you know that the National Association of Home Builders have a certified aging in place specialist designation, and locally, the Tallahassee Builders Association just completed a series of three educational 8-hour classes that help local builders gain that designation with planning, design, construction, ease of process of incorporating aging-in-place universal design into new construction, as well as working on renovation projects. And we had approximately 40 students, builders, and healthcare professionals, actually. It wasn't just builders, but we had some healthcare professionals actually attend a class. So there's a whole new crop of certified aging-in-place specialists in Tallahassee at their disposal. And many of these techniques that are being talked about, we've already started incorporating. I have a house under construction right now that we were able to add all of that deadwood in the walls without hardly any cost to the owner at all. Most of that wood is just surplus wood to put the wood in the wall for the handicap or handrails. And widening hallways, doorways, I mean, it's a nominal fee. We raised all of the outlets up to 25 inches to make it more accessible and drop the switches down. Easy things, roll-in showers, we have all that on display on one of our houses actually under construction for the public to see through our Muddy Boots tour.
That is terrific, Mr. Worley. Well, obviously, our building and trades folks are right on top of the situation here, and that is great to hear, too. Thanks so much for your call, Mark. We appreciate it. And we invite your call, too, 414-1234, 800-926-8809 for perspectives. Back on Perspectives, aging in place, avoiding for many of us a trip to the nursing home at some point in that lifespan of ours. Great panel, J.R. Harding and Larry Baxter and Jack Levine here with us to talk about this. And just heard from past president of the Tallahassee Builders Association, Mark Worley, who said that this consideration is now becoming part and parcel of the just the mindset of builders. J.R. Harding, you got to be happy about that.
I couldn't be more thrilled to hear from Mark and the association. About 15 years ago, trying to buy some homes and doing the tour with the realtor, I couldn't get into homes to even consider thinking about it, let alone learning what alterations would be needed. So this is just tremendous news, and I couldn't be more proud of this community.
And getting again to the aging thing, if we could, Larry Baxter, the fact that we have traditionally thought of Tallahassee, which either first or second youngest communities in Florida traditionally, but now we have a big push to bring in more retirees from the outside to kind of further diversify our population. So this is a consideration there here.
I agree. I'm really pleased that Mark called in, and we've talked with Mark about these features as well. Tallahassee has made some tremendous strides, not only with housing but transportation, with making that improve the ease of getting around. And the department has hosted a number of public forums around the state where we've made efforts to partner with local builders from those areas or statewide, and not only builders but home care providers, home health care providers, because if I have a health need rather than having to go to a facility to provide that service in my home. But finding out what those local needs and priorities are and inquiring from those local professionals what their interests are and their abilities to kind of sign on to this. But here in Tallahassee, we really have done some really good things. As Mark has just said, there's another housing development that's going up in the north Tallahassee area. With a developer who has 101 units that they're building, and they've committed 15 of those units for aging-in-place homes. So I think those kind of things are great. I think it's also from an economic standpoint, it's a smart move for a community and the state to take on this type of building concept, because if we department, we get calls all the time from individuals from other states looking to move to Florida or a particular community in Florida, and they're looking for what kind of housing options are there. And I think, to be able to say that, Florida has these many or really promoting aging-in-place homes that might give us the edge over some of the other states that are kind of current retirement destinations.
But you may have a house in which you have full accessibility for whatever your situation may be, but as soon as you hit the front door and the sidewalk,
correct,
it's the end. You may have to get in a vehicle and drive 3 miles to get a quart of milk, which seems kind of counterintuitive. Jack Levine, how do we get folks on the local level to say, all right, it's not just the homes, not just housing, it's also neighborhoods, it's urban design, it's all this stuff?
Well, it depends how far our vision will take us. I get around. I do a bunch of traveling to learn and to express my opinions. And one of the communities that is truly embracing this idea of multi-generational but recognizing the aging population is Sarasota. And Sarasota has some wonderful models. There's an instituteforthages.org. which we're having an international conference being planned for February. We're going to include a lot of our allies from around the state. And this is about positive aging. That's the theme of the conference, which means what are the technologies, what are the techniques, what are the policies, what are the programs that do shine a light on positive aging. What we're going to do is bring together a whole bunch of folks. We've asked Senator Nelson to host a hearing for his committee, Select Committee on Aging of the U.S. Senate. That's not confirmed yet, but maybe through the airwaves we could be a little bit more influential in expressing that desire. I've met with him and his staff in D.C. about that. And I give you that because there's really no separation between personal needs and policy opportunities. Most policy reforms have happened because individuals have felt a barrier or a need, whether it be civil rights or women's rights or disabilities rights, et cetera. So what we're looking at right now with this conference is to bring together as many folks as we can to kind of share that perspective and then take it home and grow it. I'm hearing great things about our home community here in the metro Tallahassee area, and that's great. And we're going to kind of cross-pollinate those ideas. The other thing very quickly is whenever we look at where are we going to be in the next 25 years, that's kind of antithetical to how we think about politics. Politics is always about the next election, and it is to some degree. But I think there are some advanced thinkers right now who are kind of motivating. Will Rogers said in 1932, smart politicians know where there's a parade and get in front of it. And there is a parade forming on this access issue and this removal of barriers and investing in what's right. And I'm optimistic. I take optimism pills every morning.
Well, and this is JR coming at the same time at which this community is trying to reimagine itself. So an opportunity there maybe?
Absolutely. Imagine Tallahassee can follow a little bit of the APD.CARES living, learning, and working in our community model. And I think within our cluster of the nearly 60 million folks are across the country here in Florida. You have caregivers, you have aging members of the family, and you have persons with disabilities all under one roof. And then how are you able to be a part of Imagine Tallahassee, whether that's recreation, fun, play, the grocery store, that public transportation. So as Jack said, I think getting ahead of this parade and merging our elder affairs policy, our disability policy, and our infrastructure that guides it. Because I almost can see us deconstructing the old retirement home into now the new subdivision that has choices and opportunities for everybody, not only for your home, but how about to go visit your neighbor, to participate in holiday parties, to be a part of christening, weddings in the backyard, barbecues. These are all the quality of life indicators that we want to be a part of.
And it gets – Larry Baxter, this gets us kind of back – if we can go retro for just a moment here – to the old-fashioned neighborhood and the multi-generational household, where the kids live with you. Now, when they get married, they would move away, but it wasn't across the country. It was right down the street. Meanwhile, mom and dad were right there all the time. And so the households accommodated several generations.
The department has an initiative called Communities for a Lifetime. That's a statewide initiative that works with local county and municipal governments to develop partnerships locally that kind of get back to whatever those local priorities are. And my best example of that is the neighborhood that I grew up in. You know, you could send a 7-year-old child out to get a quart of milk or to, you know, do those kind of local shopping needs. And my mother would always, when we would go to the store, grocery store, would tell us to stop by this certain elderly lady's house and find out if she wanted something and mow her grass and do whatever. And she would always say, you know, you better not take any money from her for doing those kind of things. And I can't say I always honored that request, but that was that community feeling. And it's hard to do that, you know, in some of our communities. We drive into our garages, close the garage door, our porch is in the back patio, and we never come out. We never interact with our community. So getting that front porch community back again. So this initiative really targets that kind of initiative with the local community, whether it's volunteerism, employment, transportation, you know, all those. It's really a community effort. I agree. It doesn't just stop at the front door of the house. But communities, you know, those who are living in those kind of communities see the value in that. There's a neighbor of mine who moved into development, and they moved out of a really large house here in Tallahassee area, and they were in their 80s and 70s. And when asked about why they wanted to leave and not maybe go into a, you know, assisted living or a nursing home or one of the senior housing areas, they didn't, because they said they're not old and they didn't want to live with a lot of old people. So that was their choice, and they wanted to be in a community where it was intergenerational, where they, you know, could walk next door and exchange discussions with their neighbor. So that, you know, those kind of communities are important. And Tallahassee has some of those communities. I'm really surprised. You know, I find when I drive around that there's a lot of little pockets of really neat communities. I think Florida suffers still from being such a wide, flat state that you know, that doesn't have that urban field of some of the northeastern areas, and it's more of a challenge to do that. But I think you have to have a goal.
Yeah. Do you see that as a future, Jack, or what?
I do, and I'm going to leave you in good hands right here. I've got to scoot out, believe it or not, to a meeting of Kiwanians who are looking at new ways of helping children, and that's wonderful, because the children are the ones who are going to be paying the bills as we get older, so we got to make sure we get them right. I would just say last word for me, and I'll be listening in the car on my way downtown, but you know, we can't ignore reality, and we can embrace, you know, we're the only species that knows our past or learns our past and can plan our future. Now, those are gifts. We need to know where we came from, like JR said, kind of the dark days of what it meant to have barriers. But we have the amazing gift of planning our future, and I think this conversation can spark and probably will spark a new generation of folks who say, you know what, I'm going to face reality and I'm going to find ways of a better quality of life. So, Tom, you've done a great job here in inviting JR and Larry. I'm very pleased to be part of this, and I'll be listening in as my travels take me downtown.
Jack Levine, we thank you so much for coming in and lending your thoughts and observations to the conversation. Have yourself a safe trip and watch out for those Kiwanians. They can be a rough audience, I'll tell you. But JR, that is helpful for everyone in, as we look ahead to the future, having more cohesive, more diverse, more accessible communities.
I think that's the magic that has occurred from the Americans with Disabilities Act 23 years ago tomorrow. Is at first, morally, everybody knew it was the right thing to do because of the awful institutions and the horrible treatment and out of sight, out of mind. But what we found was these structural barrier removals like ramps on the sidewalks. You know what? Baby strollers love them. Bicycle riders love them. The joggers love them. Actually, they become really tools of everyday life now. And quite frankly, we would wonder, what would we do without some of these features that are present today? And this is a natural evolution. And so part of the ADA pieces, and as you mentioned earlier, I was with the scouts, we're talking about outdoor accessibility and picnic tables and campgrounds and beach access and all the pieces that comes with a healthy part of a Floridian's life. So these are all mergings of natural synergies to maintain that independent, livable, walkable, enjoyable life.
And a longer life, because statistically we are living longer. We are growing. So this is one of the great inevitables, Larry Baxter.
You know, personal experience is probably the greatest advocate. And those of your listeners who have a loved one or a family member or maybe themselves that may have a disability or may be arthritic or have whatever kind of mobile or hearing or whatever the senses dimension diminishes with age, you know, they know the importance of this. And whether or not they're able to respond to help themselves or know what referral resources are available to help them, that's the message we want to you know, get out, that there are resources, there are individuals or agencies that they can use to find out what resources are available for them. And the department has an 800 number, 1-800-996-3337, or 1-800-96-ELDER for those who like those kind of analogies, that they can get this information. We also, on our website, Community for Lifetime website, we have a housing section where they can see information about universal design. No JRs.
And there's that great video they did with the couple here in town with the model home and the rationale of downsizing, of raising their kids, and how they stayed here in the community and what logic they used. And they're tremendous individuals for opening up such personal thoughts and feelings to share. And I think another piece of this is we now have all the puzzle pieces. And as Jack had indicated, we've learned from our past. Now, can we assemble the future so that we don't have to do this again?
Well, here is the great example right sitting around this table where you have you and we have Larry and we had Jack, where you have different interests, different organizations that are now making common cause and coming together and saying, okay, how can each of us contribute to this overall vision that we have of changing and making for a better future.
Right. And as we're wrapping up, Larry and I co-presented down at the annual Family Cafe. And there was 130 different co-presentations going on during the three-day weekend. Mm-hmm. And ours on aging in place was standing room only, with everything from 19-year-olds to 85-year-olds. The interest, the issue, and the reality here is serious.
Well, just part of the advanced planning. We have wills, you know, exactly, which we may put together when we're in our 20s. We start saving for retirement, literally from the moment that you start working. And you're kind of headed in this direction. This is just part of that mindset that, hey, you know, it will not make us age faster. We will not die sooner. It's just getting ready for something that is going to happen.
Right. We none of us know what the future holds for us. At least I'm not able to predict that. So it's giving that thought, planning ahead of time, doing it now before whatever that need that may arise happens. And doing it now maybe when you have the economic means to do that versus when you have a fixed income and your limit and your resources. So it's getting that message out to everyone, whether it's someone who's in their latter stages or middle or younger, that these are things that you need to think about and to think about in a proactive way. And I love the opportunity that, you know, that Mark called in, because people need to see these features. And I think when they see them, it kind of the aha moment. So we're really trying to around the state to inform, educate, and to make consumers as well as the professions aware of this, because I think this is ultimately a consumer-driven
right. And maybe it could be a part of the Parade of Homes model in the future, and incorporating that. And as you said, Larry, doing it now and preparing. I get so many calls from our local hospitals and other rehab facilities across the state of, could you visit? Could you be a role model? Where's this individual going to go? and they dealt with a real fire drill, and now they can't go home because their home won't accommodate them.
And that is something that I think we are all in agreement that you want to try to avoid. We could go on talking about this all day, guys, but we really appreciate it. Advocate for folks with disabilities, J.R. Harding. Again, welcome back home. Good to have you here, and thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
And Larry Baxter from the Florida Department of Elder Affairs. A delight to have you as well, sir.
Great to be here.
And thanks again to Jack Levine, who's driving to the Kiwanis Club meeting right now. Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. There's Lydell, who's been handling the phones and the emails today. Taylor's been on the board, and Megan's kind of back there providing immoral support, if you will. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thanks so much for joining us today for Perspectives. I hope you can retune in next week for more.
Are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.